Welcome to the Bangers List podcast, home of amazing taste and really good analysis and amazing jokes, guys. Sorry, I didn't prepare. Listen,
I don't think you could have sounded more enthusiastic. Listen,
so we're back after a slight break. I know we're consistent like a fucking maraca in the hands of an epileptic. But the reason we've been away, guys, it was the big man, Julian. It was his Bucks party. So what happened, guys? He's got tackled and like busted a few ribs, so he couldn't speak properly, so we had to have 2 weeks off basically. Anyway, we're back.
Let's go with that.
We're back. Today we'll be looking at a band called
Thornhill
and their song.
It's actually technically two songs we're doing today, so it's two songs that are sort of connected. The first one's called All the Lights We Don't See and the second one is called Lily and the Moon.
Yep.
So we'll jump straight into a sample.
So bands on the rise, we love that. I love that. That's one of my favourite things about this podcast is highlighting smaller bands. I'm sure to you, Julian, this band isn't necessarily small. You love them, but they are up and coming. Another Australian band, I believe they're from Melbourne.
They are from Melbourne, yes.
Oh, thank goodness. I'm glad I got that right. That was in the memory bank from somewhere. What do we think about this one, guys?
Well, I put this one on the list. I heard this record probably like 6 months ago. A friend of mine, my friend who actually recommended The Mortal Coil to me, by Polaris, recommended this, and he's like, if you like The Mortal Coil, have a listen to this one. And I didn't really give it too much of a go, like, you know, like everything, someone tells you to listen to something and you just like, oh yeah, I'll do that, and then you never do. And then I finally gave it a go, and yeah, it just grabbed me off the bat, so I thought it was worth sharing with you blokes.
Yeah, of course, and we appreciate any new music on the Bangers List as long as it bangs. I forgot something really important.
I was going to say, why are you holding your hands to your face there? What's going on?
The thing is, this podcast isn't very structured and I always forget what I'm doing and I should be a host and I just get too caught up in the bullshit we're saying.
Come on, mate.
What I really wanted to look at was like, what's going on in, you know, the metal music industry like in the last couple of weeks or last couple of months?
We'll have a quick segue.
So, does anyone remember, hear the story about Ronnie Radke falling in reverse's laptop? They couldn't perform the show. Didn't have a laptop. What's the go with that, mate? You perform live. Tell me.
I perform live, so therefore I know about the laptop story. Well, my understanding is that they were having technical difficulties. Oh, no, someone stole their fucking laptops and they used their laptops for certain like effects and what's the term I'm looking for here?
Sounds.
I know that a lot of drummers will use laptops for... I think maybe they're in ears or effects.
No, there's what's the word I'm looking for? Like samples and stuff.
Intros to songs and stuff. Parts of songs they can't do.
There's a term for it. I'll let you know if it comes back to me.
Yeah,
but anyway,
just shout it out.
It's a crucial in the middle of a fucking completely different topic.
Yeah, in the middle of a story, just yell it out.
It'll come.
Samples.
Is it dubs? Maybe I'm looking for dubs.
Overdubs,
yeah. I think, I don't even know if that's the right one, the exact one I'm looking for. But that's the kind of, anyway, that's the kind of.
Sure,
That's what I'm going for, vaguely. But, yeah, the laptops got flogged at one of the festivals they were recently playing at. Was it in the US?
Yeah, I don't assume they've left the US yet. Fucking yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Who fucking knows? And then Ronnie and the guys decided to pull the show because it's such a crucial part of their live sound. All those samples, all those dubs that they have stored on their laptops, and they, you know, and it's such a crucial part of their live setup. They decided not to do it because with the mindset being that they couldn't give their best show, therefore they wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
and it's caused a bit of a debate amongst the metal community. It's caused a bit of divide. There are some that are completely behind Ronnie, but others that that are completely against him, really, because they think that you can still play. They say you don't need all these electronic sounds to be able to, and samples, dubs, whatever, to perform live. You should be able to play with just your instruments.
But it's more than that for his songs, and it's also more than that for the
band. I completely agree with.
You got to wonder too, like, when's it acceptable to pull a show like that and say I wanted to give my best effort? And when's it, like, is it acceptable? Is it? No, it's a very grey line, isn't it? Because on one hand, it's like, you're a band, go out there and play the songs, people will get over it. But then the other is like, well, from the artist creative perspective and their like, you know, what they're entitled to as a performing artist to say, well, no, if I didn't have a fucking drum kit, I couldn't play the show. But, you know, people say, oh, that's fine. But you go, okay, well, you don't have a computer. Well, what weight do you put on which component of the show? You know what I mean? It's sort of all relative, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it is the accusations of incompetence that would be the funniest. Like, they're just trying to put out the best show, I would say, and I'll give him a break. I don't mind. If being there, I completely understand you'd be devastated, but the people that won't jump on board and just say that they're not good at what they do, I mean.
Well, I think that's a very boomer approach to it all, honestly, just saying that they should just be able to just you know, suck it up and do it, and just that they don't have the talent to play with just their instruments and or just with their, you know, their raw kind of sound. I think their particular style and their, you know, the detail that goes into their music, they can't convey that effectively without the use of technology. I mean, we've come a long way with live performance these days. And yeah, they could play, there's probably maybe, you know, 9 or 10 songs that they could play, but they probably haven't rehearsed them in fucking years. Like,
yeah, and I guess the big thing...
And it's happened suddenly. He had to make a quick snap decision, be like, right, what are we going to do? Do we half-ass this or do we pull it?
And that's the thing too. People expect, I guess, having been in a band, I sort of understand a bit better. Mm. But I think some people as fans expect a band to just be able to play any of their songs from any part of their catalogue. And they can have like 5 albums in their catalogue. They're like, oh, you should know how to play that. It's like...
Yeah.
Just I fucking wrote it. I don't listen to it.
Well, that's right. And you got to relearn. Like, you got to relearn songs.
Yeah, exactly,
don't you?
Right.
You
like, go back. There was a couple of times in the band I was in where we had a couple of old songs that we'd stop playing, and we'd get a call for an encore. We played like our whole set and all of the ones we wanted to play, and it was like, fuck. All right, do we play this old song? Like, fuck. How does it go again? Oh, you know. And you on the spot, you sort of just got to make a call. But you know, to a much much smaller degree, I completely understand that. Like. No artist, I think, is familiar with their own body of work in its entirety.
Mm. No, and that's fine. I guess at the end of the day, we all make mistakes and, yeah, that's good shit. That's good content. One more thing. Tim Henson, who we talked about recently, we talked about nylon guitars. He brought out his own signature nylon guitar.
There we go.
And
that could have come like a week earlier.
It could have.
Nice, eh?
I know.
Who found that out? Was that you?
That was me.
That was the day after we recorded that episode, wasn't it?
Pretty much. It was like very targeted advertising. I was like, oh, thank you, targeted advertising. You know me so well. You can also win, or probably too late now if you're listening to this, but you could win that guitar by doing a cover of one of their songs, and then they pick a winner to get, you know, one of the guitars. It's only cost $600, I think. That's a good price point
it's an island.
It's a good entry point.
It is, and that's just really cool. A bit of
in guitar terms, it's a good entry point. I'm not going to say $600 is cheap, but as far as buying a guitar, that's a good entry point.
It absolutely is, yeah.
And I like that. That's just a couple of, like, you know, two bands we've talked about in the past that have had recent news, a bit of an update. And what do you recommend? What do you got to say in the music news or whatever?
Alter Bridge have dropped a fucking killer album, Pawns and Kings. They dropped it a bit over a week ago.
Yep.
It fucking slaps, hey.
Love
it's
it.
So good. Like, it's on the heavier side for them. I'd say it's probably the heaviest record they've released to date, if not the heaviest since their very early days. But they're just firing on all cylinders.
Fucking long. Miles Kennedy doesn't miss, as they say.
Miles Kennedy, Mark Tremonti, mate, they're fucking on point.
And don't forget, this band is ex-Creed members and a new singer, basically. And we all know Creed from...
really shit 90s music.
How's his voice go? Well, I once heard. Sorry. Yeah. That's enough of that.
The Jesus loving
like
Eddie Vedder.
He's like Skillet from Wish.
He's Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, but just a Jesus lover instead.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Any news you'd like to share, Julian, before we get back to today's initial programming?
Probably. Nothing that immediately comes to mind, though.
Nice. And you can talk properly and breathe today with that rib injury.
Good show.
All right, guys, look, back to Thornhill. So you guys did touch on before I interjected so rudely about the, you're going to say, ambience of the song. And for me, this whole album, this whole record, I'm not a huge fan, right? And it's not necessarily the ambience, because as we said, the ambience is kind of how a situation or a context makes you feel, right?
Yeah.
It's very atmospheric, right? You would say.
That's a good way to describe it.
So just for the full context, the record's called The Dark Pool, as I said earlier, and it came out, I think, 2020. I got it here.
Love that.
2019. So it's 3 years old now, but as a whole, the record is very atmospheric. Like, it's very full in its sound.
It's almost theatrical. I know that's probably a bit of a stretch, but that's kind of a vibe I'm getting. getting
a vibe. I'd say it's thematic. Like it has a specific theme, the dark pool. It's got a dark, eerie tone.
Correct.
And vibe throughout its entire.
Sorry, continue what you were saying.
That's basically it. But for me, I'm trying to think why I don't like it. And sometimes it's very hard to critically analyze why you don't like something because you'd rather just say I don't like it than cut it there.
I think what might not have helped is when I think I messaged you and I was like, dude, this album is like, I don't think it's, I didn't say it was the same tier as The Mortal Coil by Polaris because I think that record is just like a 10. But it was the first record since that sort of record to just grab me. Do you know what I mean? There have been like a number of records across my, you know, music listening life, like, that have just grabbed me. So like the first one was Volume 3 by Slipknot. And then the next one was Soundtrack to Your Escape by In Flames. You know, and then Young Bloods, Suicide Season, all those bands that I love and stuff like that. So it was another, I'd been wondering for a long time since The Mortal Coil came out. I was like, am I ever going to have a record that grabs me like that again?
Yes.
It's a perpetual fear.
Do you feel that? Like, where am I ever going to find something as good as X band that I love or X album?
Yeah, you want to relive that feeling, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
But you know, when it's like finishing a really good TV show. You go, oh, fuck, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I finish True Detective Season 1, I watch it every now and then again. And when I finish it, I'm like, I'm never going to see TV this good ever again.
Yeah.
And then I remember The Sopranos exists. So I'm like, 6 seasons of that, thank you.
Yeah.
So I think, back to what I was saying, when I sold it to you, I said, this is like Mortal Coil tier quality. So I don't know if I set you up for failure there, because they aren't similar musically.
Well, moving away from my original point, and it's kind of, you were saying that certain albums grab you. And like certain, and Daniel said certain albums grab him. I bet if we all said the last one to grab us, that would all be completely different. And that's just a very kind of interesting point for music.
This one,
yes. If you could just say right now, I know it's a hard question. I know no one cares.
Come back to me, man.
Yeah, hard to do, but they're different.
Oh no, you know, I'll say Black Flame by Bury Tomorrow.
There you go, and then I'll say the latest Dance Gavin Dance album. So it's that's
Jack by Juicer.
Yes, Jack by Juicer. They're all very, very different, right? And that's interesting that we come like that. And so for me, very small things in the sound of that band turned me off. And I'm gonna call it the mix. And you say the mix is to do with volumes and levels of instruments and blah 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 and all that thing, all your vocals and how it kind of sounds in a soundscape. Whether you're listening to headphones or if you're listening to the car, it sounds different, but the levels are all there and it affects it for me. So these guys, it's the vocals are always, I feel like they're lost in the wash. That could be a choice by them, but it's always like, it reminds me of Muse from 2008, early Muse songs like
you listen to
Kings of Cydonia, right? It's a very, it's the voice is there, but it's almost, it's not.
I know Knights of Cydonia though.
Yeah. So what you're sort of touching on is when the vocals are the primary or the biggest part of the mix, or just simply you can fucking hear the vocals hyper clear.
They take a back seat a little bit. Well, not take a back seat, but they blend in. They blend in with the music a little bit. Yeah, they don't stand out.
What might be part of it as well, because it's not musically, it's quite rounded. It's like a nice soft. Yeah. Even though when it's heavy, it's a nice sort of soft, approachable heavy.
Absolutely.
I think Jacob Charlton's voice, he's really good, by the way. He's really good live. But his voice is that very kind of like airy, not sing-song, but like floating kind of cleans. And maybe that helps it get lost in the mix. But also his screams are quite shrill. Sort of on the way to Brian Garris.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like not very far on the way, but like that sort of shrill kind of shriek, I guess.
Okay.
So I think maybe those, like his cleans particularly, they get lost in the
yeah, and it's
the
elements.
The melody of everything.
I'm trying to like maybe hear what he says or like contextualize what he's talking about, and I'm like, oh, I just can't quite get it clearly. So perhaps that's frustrating, but still, he is a very good singer, like you said. And Daniel yourself, as I said, you're a highly respect your singing. With this guy, he's got a really smooth transition between head and chest voice. That's like, it's very hard to transition through those. He does it in, I believe, in this song.
He does it seamlessly.
Yeah, seamlessly. And that's a talent you guys learn, right? So how do you feel about his singing, actually? Because I just talk
shit. His singing's great. I think, like we touched on, in the mix, it doesn't really do his voice justice. But I think at the same time, to suit the overall theme that this album is trying to portray, I think it suits it really well. So I think the fact that it's dialed down a little bit and it allows it to blend in, and it's like you said, Julian, it's got a soft, really soft feel to it. Even though it's heavy music, it's got a really soft feel to it.
Yeah, that's
But the way his put it. His singing is like really solid. I need to listen to it a little bit more. I've only listened to their most recent record once, but I need to give it a little bit more before I really break down his voice. But
it's sort of like you don't often come across a singer that does those big, long, sweeping notes. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't have the... You've got singers, clean singers that can do sustain.
Yeah.
But they don't have those really, really melodic... I don't know how to describe
well,
it.
Well, yeah, you describe it as like legato, basically. Think like a slide on a guitar.
Yeah.
And he's a very smooth voice. Like his transitions from one note to the next are very smooth.
Yeah.
And the notes, much like the vocals in the mix, actually blend in with the instruments.
Yeah.
His notes going from one to the next, they kind of blend in with one another as well. So it's just... Yeah, it's kind of hard to describe, but yeah, legato is a term. It's like a smooth transition from one note to the next, and he has a lot of that going on.
He's one singer I've noticed. There's another singer, and they fucking escape me. Help me out if you know it, but he can go from a clean note to a vocal fry. So it's like it goes from clean to unclean without taking a breath. And he sort of does it in this song, but there's another singer, and it'll come to me as soon as we finish the episode.
Do you know the band?
No. It's okay. Probably great. Fucking, yeah, it's, I don't know. But they go from, yeah, a clean note. It starts a clean note and their voice, continually making noise with their voice box and it ends up as a scream.
Yeah, transition and control is a big part of
it. Sort of does it in this song, but not.
Yeah, well, that's next level kind of stuff because you got to go from you got to activate what they call your false vocal cords or whatever when you are doing an unclean vocal. So clean to unclean, you got to activate like a different part of your vocal cords. And
yeah, right.
Yeah, you'd have to be super trained up to do that. Sure. Like it'd be fucking intense. But yeah, he's got like really, his singing's on point, super melodic, kind of takes you on a bit of a journey, yeah. I think. And it's very, very eerie tone to it. He's got a very soft voice, but he can kind of easily just, you know, I guess get from one part to the next without it seeming like it's
effort.
Much of a jump or much effort at all. Yeah,
yeah.
It happens very seamlessly.
In my notes, I wrote that he has a dynamic range. I should have just written that he's got a very large range. Why would I write dynamic range? What's a dynamic range?
I don't know. Well, large to me would be you can go from a really low note to a super high note. I wouldn't say that. I just think he's got really good control. He might have a really big range. I just say he's got really good control. He knows his voice and he uses it really well.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah.
So obviously this song has very, we say heavy parts. I'll almost say they're genty parts, and it's kind of contrasted with the slower, gentler kind of rock sounds, like you said. How do you feel about that polarization? As I said, I'm not a fan.
I think this record was weird to approach for me because you guys know me, I'm traditionally into the heavier stuff.
Mm.
I like the cleans and I like the melodics, but there's got to be a breakdown in there somewhere. And there's pretty much no breakdowns on this record. There's not really much in the way of chugs. We'll get to their EP before that, but it was like I said, it's like the Getaway Plan's Other Voices, Other Rooms record, which I fucking love, but it's a straight up Aussie rock record. It's a straight up alternate rock record.
Mm.
There's no breakdowns, there's no chugs, it's just, there's no double kicking really and stuff like that. So all these hallmarks of music that I like or like features common found, not there.
Mm.
But I think what grabbed me was the atmospherics of it. And I think, in regards to what you've asked me, the sort of contrast of the song All the Lights We Don't See, which is sort of just like there's a term for a song that's like connected to a bigger song that's like a shorter one. It's not like an intro though. Then do you know what I mean? It's like a 2-minute song that's connected to a 4-minute song. I know there's a term for that one, but I can't think of what it is.
I just think of it as like a
transition
song.
Yeah, exactly right. That starts off with the really nice, clean, plucked guitar and stuff like that. Yeah. The drums, their drummer Ben Mido, I believe his name is, he's pretty good. He's actually done a couple of playthroughs on YouTube.
Mm.
He reminded me a bit of Nick Pedersen from Northlane because one of the first things I saw of them was him playing this song on YouTube. And I thought, he's got that real kind of, I know what the fuck I'm doing feel about him. But so it looks effortless. Like you watch someone like Nick Pedersen play, effortless. And he can sit in a groove, but he's also got the weird off-time stuff. He doesn't have to play, in the pocket sort of thing.
He's got a lot of character with his playing.
Yeah, so it starts into that and then works its way in up to the end of All the Lights We Don't See. And then Lily and the Moon comes in with a double bass.
Yeah, and you don't even notice unless you're actually watching the change of song title on the screen.
Yeah, sure. Like I think that's a good example overall of your question, I suppose, with the ins and outs. I definitely have to be in a certain mood, I think, to listen to the softer stuff. But for like this kind of thing's very approachable from all angles, I feel.
Yeah, I cop that the screams aren't so in your face that it might turn you off. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's more the screams are that uncommon that you go, oh, that's right, there's unclean vocals on this record.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, something else that's majority unclean versus cleans. So, you're looking at me.
with a lot of intent.
Just staring at me intensely.
Sorry for the dead air. That's why I'm here to host things. And, yeah, I actually asked Daniel earlier about their gent sound. Do you reckon it's a genty sounding song in some of the guitars? You said there's no breakdowns, blah, blah, blah. But is there a bit of gent in it? And that's just where you just smack like one string on a seven string, eight string guitar, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, look, it has a bit of a gent influence there. A gent touch to it, I suppose.
A gentle touch.
A gentle touch.
Fine gentleman here.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd need to look at the guitars. What's actually going on with the guitars a little bit more, but it certainly sounds like it.
Little
tiny.
Look at us, very critical.
Subtle, genty.
Yep.
Or gentle riffs.
Sorry, just a bit of a technical difficulty with the microphone there.
Lovely. Much better.
I've got a really loud voice, and I was worried you weren't speaking directly into yours. Oh, so look, I was like, the mix is going to be fucked.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Always sort it out. Right.
So the song Lily and the Moon. If you actually look at the, I forget what they call it on Spotify. There's like a little movement card behind the song title. If you look at that,
that's
Lily. That's his dog.
It's about his doggo. Yeah,
I think it's Jacob Charlton's dog. I'm going to go ahead and say they actually put up an Instagram post a couple of months back saying that unfortunately Lily had passed away, and a few people were like, well, this song came out in 2019, so I believe this is like a 3-star. I believe that his dog was getting sick, or he had, you know, his dog was unwell. And it was to do with, I think it's a song, like sort of a love song in general, but it's a song about his dog, basically.
Yeah, well, that post, you know? Actually, I believe he might not have been that particular post, but in an interview somewhere, once again, maybe like a 2-star, 3-star, but I believe he stated that that's what inspired me to write this song. However, you can take it however you want, because it's, you know, it's...
It's lyrically such a powerful song. Yeah. You can...
It's about any sort of love story, really.
No, knowing that it was about a dog didn't ruin like the lyrics for me.
No, it kind of made it more, I don't know, it kind of made it better for me, really, in a way, because it made it a really personable, I guess you could say, because you can relate to that. Like
it takes a certain quality of lyricist to write a song that's incredibly personal, but also incredibly approachable by a broad spectrum of people as well.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, some songs, you know, it's specifically about one concept. Or topic.
Because we're relating to it on different kind of levels.
Yeah,
you could almost be like, oh, it reminds me of a relationship or a person. But
exactly right.
I
think the worst part being like, you know, like early 30s now, sort of millennials, I think the worst part is that I think all of us can probably relate to losing a dog as a pet.
That's what I was getting at, yeah. And I think that's what made it so cool. Like it made it more meaningful for me personally.
Yeah, exactly.
Like once I discovered that, because I was like, what the fuck is this actually about? What's the moon? What's it symbolizing?
Right, yeah.
But I think he's kind of going for this whole thing of that, you know, one day Lily won't be there and Lily like is his life. You know, Lily means so much to him that you know, he hopes that one day he'll see her on the other side.
Exactly right, yeah. I think... As a social commentary, it sucks that dogs live less than humans do.
Oh,
because dogs are great and humans suck. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've liked way more dogs I've met than I've liked people.
You've got the biggest social circle in the fucking country we live in. So
I've met a few dogs then, eh?
Yeah.
So I think, like I said, millennials can definitely relate to that. I mean, you don't have to like any pet. It doesn't have to be a dog. It's any like pet that you've had. I think as well. That's like you said. It's why it's so approachable.
Yeah.
I'll
prompt you further then, because we said it, you know, it's obviously touching on like a sad topic, and it's also got those soft part of the songs and the heavier parts of the songs. And this isn't their latest album, right?
It's
their latest
not,
album
no.
is called Heroin, or, you know, not, as, it, not as in the drug, as in the female hero. And that kind of, I guess the expectation was that they would stay very heavy, right? So I gave Heroin a playthrough, and I don't think it's very heavy at all, which I didn't expect.
No, they went for a full-blown style change.
So...
So if you their first EP was called 13.
Yep.
I haven't really listened to that extensively. About 2 months ago, I started listening to at the request of a friend or the advice of a friend as well. Their second EP called Butterfly. And it's a lot heavier. It's heavier again than the Dark Pool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then 13's a little bit heavier again. One of the things that grabbed me straight off the bat, and I'll talk about this later on, is there are more uncleans. So it's slightly heavier, slightly more in your face. There's a couple of breakdowns in there. And he's got a more of an aggressive vocal delivery style. So once you know that or you've seen that, you can see the trend in the direction of their music. So they've gone for this. They probably, you know, they started a little bit heavier, like a metalcore band. Or like, you know, a hardcore, hardcore band. Vibes, yeah. And then they've started not going downhill, but trending away from that kind of heavy sound towards their own kind of groove. Now, I wasn't massive on Heroin.
Daniel? Did you like Heroin? Did you listen
I haven't
to
given
it?
Enough of a chance, no. But it didn't grab me well, at all, really.
I don't think it's bad. I think they went for a style change.
Which
and
is
based
fine.
On the reviews yeah. and the buzz they got at the time, it worked. But like we say quite often, nobody is entitled to a musician's creativity but that musician and their bandmates.
And Jacob, that's right. Jacob Charlton, who you said was the lead singer,
correct.
He doesn't want to do heavy music.
No, I believe they've pretty much said that they don't want to do super heavy stuff. They've got this kind of glam. It's not glam, but there's an element of like glammy kind of, even just the stage presence and the promotional media and stuff like that. They've got this kind of like glam metal, kind of glam rock feel. Not like the cringy shit that you saw in the 80s. But it's, you see, like, glam's the only, like, way I can think to describe it. But it's sort of like on the way to theatrical or spooky a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cabaret.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah, cabaret's a good way to describe it. So they got that kind of feel going for them as well.
Yeah, so I guess, image. Like, if you're listening to this song and us, and then you're like, oh, I want to hear more. Maybe you don't want to hear more. Sorry.
Look, it's all possible. It felt a bit weird putting this song on the list because I was like, this is a band that I probably won't listen to much of going forward. But this record, I think, is amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Daniel.
So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's good if you can have that one staple record from the band and like,
if you've got it, it'll, that,
yeah, and yeah, it'll, sure. it'll always, but you can always go back and fucking listen to it. Like, even if there's just one record from one band that you can just go back to and you know, just to feed your nostalgia, whatever it might be. I get that
even
same
if
thing.
Even if it's
an
EP.
Yeah.
There's a fucking EP by a band called Anime Fire.
Yeah.
That came out in 2012. It's a 4-track EP. They've been broken up for over a decade. They're a Perth metalcore band.
But you'll always have that. It's just out there now. It's just out there. So accessible now. Like, I get that with the original Wolfmother album, the self-titled one, because it's just start to finish so fucking amazing. And and they've released like half a dozen albums since then, I think another 5 or 6 records with some, you know, and Andrew Stockdale's done some solo stuff in between. And they've had some, you know, some good songs here and there, but it's a completely different lineup. Not quite the same sort of.
Is it
because
he's just a cunt? No one likes him.
I don't. Look, I've met him. I've met him. Hung out with him. He shouted us all drinks and shit. Like, he seems pretty cool. I just think he might have, maybe has a little bit of LSD. I don't know, but
yeah, possibly. Good throwback there. One thing I wanted to observe there is in what you're saying and what I mentioned is, if you were to talk to a musician that wrote a record that you really liked and then wrote the rest of their career or so far their career that you didn't, they would be more than entitled to say, is what I gave you that you love not enough? I've already given you something that you love. Why do you expect, like, what reason do you have to expect any more from me? Do you see what I mean? It's this really weird kind of entitlement I think we have as musicians, music fans.
We grow differently.
Yeah.
We're all on our own. We're all on our own journey.
But you're sort of getting at.
Yeah.
If you were a cabinet maker or like a woodworker and you built me a beautiful dining set and I was like, well, okay, well, can you do something else for me? And you're like, but hang on a second, I already did this really great thing for you.
Yeah.
Why do you need more? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a million other bands.
Or you
out
make
there.
Them a bed frame and it breaks. The next time around. So it's,
great example.
Anyway, right fuck there. You guys.
No, I get what you mean. I know what you're saying. And look, personally, I get frustrated at fans that say, oh, it's not the old shit. It's not the old shit. You know, it's
how
no good.
That's me. Sick of that to you
that's
guys.
Me. Oh, it's God, you sick of me?
Fuck off, mate. Get out of here. No, we need you for this podcast. Yeah. You hold it together, man.
He's the glue that holds my waffling and your theory together.
Yeah. But just, you know, back to that example, like, Wolfmother released their second album, lineup change, all this shit went down. Second album's still fucking phenomenal, but it's just not the first album. And that's just my opinion. There are others that'll probably like some of the other releases a little bit better. But
exactly,
it's just, you know, it was a different time. Like it's you need kind of need the stars to align as well. And like it was just one of those records that I'll go back to and be like, yeah, I remember that. That was fucking sick. The feeling I got when I first listened to this, it grabbed me. Like it's one of the first albums to just be like, yeah, that fucking grabbed me. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And look, in my opinion, they'll never top it, and that's fine. Like, but I'm still gonna give the other, you know, other stuff they release, I'll give it a crack, and
it's such,
and I'll still dig it, but just maybe not as much.
Yeah, exactly right. Sorry, I just want to say it's a weirdly inwardly toxic trait to have a favorite record by a band, because you go, oh, that's the one I like the most because of this and this and all these positive reasons, but on the back end, it actually can be really bad because you're like, oh, there are all these reasons why I don't like these other records.
That's so good.
You know what I mean? If you just went, I like, you know, all of X band's albums, and you just weren't that much of a stickler for correctness that you needed a favorite. But like, we're all just like, nah, this one's my favorite and everything else is shit.
I guess that's kind of what we're going for with the podcast, isn't it, guys? We're trying to give people that feeling, like, check this out, and then hopefully it's the one you're like, oh my God, it just grabbed me. I loved it.
How fucking sick of music would you get if you only listened to like one or two bands?
I mean,
I know you did that.
That for several years. Yeah,
that's a throwback. I feel like
my six stack, man.
That's
three albums from two different bands.
That's a reference to the Trivium episode. If anyone wants to go back and listen to that,
I assume that people will get, like, obviously we listen in our own ways, but I assume someone will like maybe have an album, they'll play it on repeat for a couple of weeks, and then maybe they go back to a shuffle, or some people just always shuffle. It's all different. Like, sometimes I'll just listen to one album for like 2 weeks, and
I have phases like that. I think
so. Yeah.
Just depends on what's doing it for you at the time, I suppose.
Exactly. Do you have this thing? What I used to do is, if I had a song that I really liked and I just found and didn't really have like an album I liked with it, at the start of the day.
Oh no! I know where this is going.
No, it's nothing to do with doing a poo, mate. At the start of every day.
What? I'll come back to. Okay, sorry.
We're gonna have to swing back around to that later. Yeah. Carry on.
At the start of every day, I'm taking a dump. No, what I'm saying is, I have a song and I love it. At the start of every day, I'll put that song on when I'm about to drive to work. Or whatever. First thing I do in the morning is like listen to that song and be pumped for the day. Do you ever do that? Like have a song that gets you going?
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say, isn't it great when you find a song that doesn't have an album or you don't know the album?
Oh.
And then you listen.
I was way off.
No. And then you listen to that song to fucking death.
Oh yeah.
And then it becomes the one song on the record that you can't fucking stand.
Yeah, that can happen too.
Before I forget. Actually, no, the fans of Slipknot ruined that for me. I think I'd say Duality would be there. I love that song, but I just can't fucking listen to it.
And I get that. And you know what? These tangents, boys, we just get so carried away. Should we get things back on track here?
Yeah, sure.
Lily and the Moon. So other songs by them that we like, and I'll go first. And I think it's called Where We Go to Die.
That's Where We Go When We Die.
Where We Go When We Die, right? You could have almost ended their catalogue there for me. Where We Go When We Die, I do enjoy that song. The heavy parts are good. I do like it. So
yeah,
and I listened to the song, the album rather, a couple of times.
Yeah,
to pick that one out for me. Do you guys have any other songs by them that you like? Not necessarily off that album.
Just no, off this
for
album.
For the listeners?
No, you go.
I'm going off this album because I haven't really given Heroin much of a crack as yet.
Someone clip that. we're documenting Daniel's spiral into hard drugs.
Where it began. It all began here. I'm going to say Red Summer.
Yep.
And it's not like a whole heap to that, but I feel like it's a nice sort of midpoint of the album. And I think of the album as a whole, I can get lost in this album just like listening to it. Just, it takes you on a journey. I feel like that's a crucial part of the album that sort of sets you up for the back end of it. And I get these cool, eerie, Stranger Things vibes when
Summer is very, 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 it's a very good example of the atmospheric element that we were discussing earlier.
I fucking feel like I'm in the Upside Down, man.
That's exactly right. And his vocals are haunting. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just...
Yes, there we go. Haunting. That's probably what I was kind of going for earlier. Thank you.
Yeah.
Haunting's a great way to describe his vocals. Yeah.
So Red Summer for you.
Red Summer.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because like Views from the Sun is the first one I heard by them. And it's like this kind of moderately technical, like soft metalcore song. Mm. Then the rest of the album sounds nothing like it. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of a weird thing. Really weird thing, sorry.
Yeah, but true, actually.
Yeah, I would say... Sunflower from the Butterfly EP. There's a couple of really good songs on there. Butterfly's a good one. But the Sunflower, the song, and this is what I almost said earlier I wanted to touch on. He does have that more aggressive vocal delivery, but he does something that I haven't heard since the Getaway Plan, and he sings in his Australian accent.
Oh, crazy. Sick.
Yeah. No, but he does cleans and uncleans in his Australian accent. He doesn't put on the more approachable American accent that the majority of the singers we know sing in. And they're not trying to sound American, but it's just the most known sound
yeah.
in the sort of the Western world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And that's a good point to bring up. And I can tell you about some experiences I've had from my singing tuition over the years.
Sure.
And I would want to sing a song, and we'd have like, you know, a sample song that we're working on, or, you know, like a whatever it was at the time. And it was usually an American band or a band that would sing in an American accent, whether they'd be from the UK, Australia, yeah. whatever. And so I'd be trying to mimic that. And then my singing teachers always like, I basically get a fucking slap on the wrist, say, just sing with an Australian accent, you will sound better.
That's
sing is because singing, that they describe it as like singing is like, an expansion of your natural voice, really.
Yeah, right.
And if you try to put on an accent, you're going to be restricting yourself in ways. So if you're learning how to sing correctly, bit, yeah. to sing with correct technique, you are usually meant to use your natural accent a little bit more. But like no one fucking does it. Well, some people do.
But it's a very good point to bring up.
Yeah, and in all honesty, I could, at a technical from a technical standpoint, I would sound a lot better if I sung in an Australian accent, but it would sound fucking weird because it's an Australian accent.
It does sound weird, doesn't it? Isn't
it jarring? It's really jarring.
We've been conditioned to think that our mother accent is strange.
Yeah.
Why? In music.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more, there's nothing greater to my ear than an Australian accent because it's just so fucking weird. Like, you know, it's why there's a movie called, what is it, Pacific Rim? I've tried to watch that like three times, right?
Yeah,
and then every time I turn it off is when they get to the two guys that are playing the Australians. And I know, and I'm like, I know that that actor is British and that actor is an American. Yeah. And they both sound like they're from South Africa and it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
I can't do
they
it.
They can't nail it.
But like I said, we've been conditioned musically to think that what we naturally speak in is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude.
You know, and but is it we've been conditioned that Australian accent sounds weird or anything that's not an American accent sounds
strange? Well, maybe more so the former. I think it is more so Australian accents or... Cause I'm just thinking of, you know, bands like the fucking Sex Pistols or whatever. They use their British accent. They basically just fucking talk their way through a song.
Yeah, exactly,
you know?
Right.
I don't know. I think we're mostly conditioned to the American accent, but we will accept British accents as well. Yep. But when someone sings an Australian accent, it's like...
It's nasally.
the mainstream realm of music. I'm not talking like a parody song or whatever. I'm talking like, you know, legitimate.
Well, because
like
we import the majority of our quote unquote popular music from America.
Yeah,
or parts other than Australia.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah. Speaking of, like, I just wanted to touch on something Thornhill related because I feel like we've sort of touched on. We've talked about a lot of things adjacent to Thornhill. They recently cancelled a tour. They were on the undercard for August Burns Red and Miss May I through Europe. There was another band that escapes me.
For a small band, that is a very big opportunity.
That's a huge tour. Mm. Like, I mean, doesn't matter who you are, getting on the undercard for August Burns Red, you're going to be playing in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh my God, we owe August Burns Red so much, but like they would probably be a pretty cool band to tour with because I just think that they'd probably be a bunch of cool dudes. But it was a big opportunity for them. And the reason they gave was that they were mentally exhausted. They mentally burnt out because they recorded parts of Heroin in lockdown. Like they actually, I think they were a bit naughty and they did it at home. They tracked vocals here and there. So it was sort of like guerrilla warfare recording for them. And I think, you know, obviously the pandemic and the lockdowns and stuff took a different toll on every band. But what I found interesting was while you would expect every band to be out there hitting it as hard as they possibly can, for instance, Polaris, they're just fucking touring as hard as they possibly can because they dropped a record that got blocked by the lockdown, whereas these guys have put one out afterwards. They've come out and said, we've got to stop. They said, we had to consider the longevity of the band.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's a direct quote from them.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, also their guitarist, I think Matt Van Duppen, he has actually stepped down from the band to be the full-time manager of the band. So they've had a lineup change as well, or they haven't got another guitarist yet, I don't believe. So they've got all these things. And I think it's just important to point out that whilst, you know, bands are sort of expected to be out there touring when they're not making music or having a break, that it's not really fair to expect bands to just do that. Do you know what I mean? Like they toured Australia recently and I was going to go and see them, but unfortunately Jacob Charlton got laryngitis for a couple of shows, and that was the Canberra show.
Mm.
And they said they were going to do an instrumental, so I ended up not being able to go. They did an instrumental set for a couple of shows because he had laryngitis for like a few days and, you know, he didn't want to sing and sound shit and then risk damage to his voice box. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I think things like that, you know, you never know what's going on behind the scenes, but there could be all these little stresses amalgamating to saying, like, fuck, do we even want to keep being a band? You know, so I just sort of wanted to touch on that briefly.
Yeah, it's not the environment. We probably all make it out to be in our heads of, like, some holiday all the time. It's a lot of hard work.
Oh, fuck.
Especially if you don't have, like, if you don't have a bus to tour in or you're touring in a van.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a 12-person van. You've got, like, six people in it.
Yeah, and you got to find, you know, shitty motels to sleep in, yep. or you know, sometimes you'll just sleep in your fucking van. Like.
Yeah,
and carrying your gear, as you know, Daniel, is
carrying
your,
it's is fucking tough. Sucks, it's man. Tough. Like, lugging is not, if you don't have roadies to do it all for you.
Yeah.
It's fucking hard work.
So shout out to the bands.
Like,
that
do
are
you
doing
guys
stuff?
Want to help out tonight? Or lug some shit.
We
for
we
me?
Laugh like, oh yeah, fuck you, mate. did but, you? I know before you were saying that you think, not to me personally, this was before the podcast. You said that you feel like Thornhill is like the next generation of bands coming through Australia.
Yeah, it's so sort of a weird thought that I had because, you know, these guys, I think they toured with Void of Vision a few times, and I know Void of Vision is, I don't know a lot about them, so we'd probably do well to have a listen to them, but I know that they're one of those sort of next generation bands as well. And just to continue the fucking 5 minutes of straight Julian dialogue,
get it in ya.
Monologue. it occurred to me recently that a lot of bands that I listen to now are not bands influenced by the bands that I grew up listening to. There's this sort of wave of bands that are not a direct result of Parkway Drive, and they're not a direct result of the Amity Affliction. You know, these bands might be influences on these guys, but there are other bands that have come along since that have made their mark on the scene too. You know, like Justice for the Damned, Void of Vision are two that come to mind straight off the bat. So it's just a weird time for me musically as an Australian music fan because there's these absolute, like, giants of my musical, you know, the cornerstones of my musical library.
The headliners.
Amity, Parkway, North Lane, bits and pieces of In Heart's Wake, you know, I Killed the Prom Queen. But those bands, those albums they put out were 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Mm.
That just, and it sort of occurred to me that the amount of content that's come out since then that I may have missed or not even seen, like, up and coming because I was too focused on, you know, these bands that I've been following for years, sort of just hit me, like, blew my mind a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, a bands can't last forever, man. They will move on, they will die, they will break up, as you said before, and it's just, someone's got to fill the void, I guess, really.
Yeah, exactly right. And you know, it is good to see Australian bands, like, coming out and making good music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We're so stuck in this little Australian niche, and that's really funny because our listener base, the most amount of listeners are from America.
Anyway. Well, they want to know. Like, but
well,
I mean,
we
it's,
sing
it's,
in their accent. So
from, you know, what I can see, it's pretty well accepted across in America that there's a lot of good stuff coming out of Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need to ask someone over there. I fucking know that.
Okay.
We are very weird on this little island nation, though, aren't we? We're very, like,
we're
our music's the best, and fuck everybody else.
We're proud.
Oh, please come to A7X. Please come to.
Yeah.
But we also love American bands and even EU bands, et al. So yeah,
there's the et al.
There it is.
Had to drop it in. Thank you.
That's going to be the crunchy riff of the new season.
what do you reckon, Daniel? Is there anything else you want to add, bro?
Any other bands that sound like these guys? It's on the topic of influences, similarities, you know, between bands, any just, that sort of jump out at you?
Well,
don't have to be Australian. They don't have to
okay,
be.
Okay. Fuck, man, that's hard for me. Because I said Muse earlier. I was just like one song because the singing was similar.
Narcissidonia you're referring to? Or
yeah, specifically. Yeah. Oh, there's probably some other ones. But that sound with, like, the vocals being caught at the back in the wash and I can't think of anything. I'm sorry, like, I'm pretty ignorant. Don't listen to enough music, clearly. Too many Joe Rogan podcasts.
Get the fuck out.
What do you reckon?
It's a fucking hard one, isn't it? Because it's not, a well-trodden part of my music listening.
Exactly.
I'd say the Getaway Plan's Other Voices, Other Rooms record. It had a nice big atmospheric sound to it, like Rhapsody on a Windy Night, that sort of thing. I keep thinking Still Remains for some reason.
Okay.
But not really.
No, that's...
I don't know why.
I think you're getting mixed up. Yeah. Maybe. I think you're getting mixed up. It could even... sometimes I think you can recognize or think two songs sound the same because of a key. Which
yeah.
You can get... Anyway.
Yeah.
Fuck, boys. Well, what do you reckon, Daniel?
I've got one called Maytal. M-E-Y-T-A-L.
Mm.
American or Canadian? American band. And they're similar in the sense of the singing. The lead singer has a slightly softer, high-pitched voice. And whilst the riffs could be considered, you know, heavy, they're mixed quite softly, much like Thornhill has been here. So I they're the sort of the two direct comparisons I could make. Yeah, and when and they're the only band that jumped out at me and goes, these guys remind me of these guys.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Check them out. I think they've still got some shit going. They've done maybe two records. Interesting story about them. Maybe I'll get one of their songs on the list at some point.
Sure.
So it's actually founded by a female drummer who would do covers on YouTube. Yeah, she'd do metal covers on...
Madel Cohen or whatever.
Madel Cohen, yeah. And she started her YouTube channel and just started doing, you know, System of a Down, A7X. I think she got famous from a Toxicity cover that she did with some violinists, and she was just fucking tearing it up on the drums. Yeah, she's fucking really good, like really technically sound, and a lot of personality when she plays too. And but anyway, she ended up getting her fans to fund the production of her first album, and she got these musicians together, and they toured, and it was a pretty sick album. And a singer sounds a lot like, what's his name? I've forgotten
Jacob
him already.
Charlton.
Yeah, Jacob Charlton from Thornhill. So check them out. I think you will see I think it's a pretty, you know, pretty direct comparison there. Like, they're not too far off. Maybe not as eerie sounding as
we'll listen to one of their songs, and then we'll just do this episode again. But every time someone says the word Thornhill, we'll just have Joel shouting. We'll just overdub Joel shouting Maidl instead.
Yeah. I'll give you that soundbite now. Maidl. Cool. That's done.
Sorry, I was laughing for that.
It's all right.
I think she's pregnant now at the moment too. So she happens to be listening to this, congratulations.
Well done.
Yeah, good on her.
Right. Joel's salivating at the concept.
So for the Bangs, who would like to throw their name to the ring to go first?
I'll go first. Yeah, maybe Bangs. I put it up. I'm just going to go with 7.5.
Okay.
Because it's got things that we like. It's got the atmospheric and moody kind of melodic stuff.
Things we like.
But it's got a bit of the Hevel. Hevel?
Hevel.
Fuck you.
Hevel.
The Hevel.
Hevel.
It's got the gentle Hevel.
The gentle Hevel, that's right. It's got a bit of the heavy stuff as well. You know, that part where he screams, I'd climb all the way to where they left your soul just to bring you back. And he goes from clean to a fry scream, comes in with that heavy bit there. I'd give 7.5.
Dig it. Daniel?
I'll go a 7. And we're talking both tracks as a whole, right?
Oh, technically. 8 then. So yeah, I'm going to change mine to 8. I forgot about all the lights we didn't say. Yep.
Yeah, I'll still stick with a 7 because it's really good, really fucking solid. It's not one that... It's not a massive standout track for me in the context of like everything else I might listen to, but it stands out within the context of this album.
It's a very solid midpoint to the record.
It really is, and it's just when I listen to this, like I said earlier, I kind of get lost in the whole album because it's that dark, eerie theme that's going on throughout. You kind of just drift away, and so that means I'm not actually paying a lot of attention to what's going on a lot of the time because it's like an experience of
it's
sorts.
Kind of like listening to, I don't know if this is a bit of a weird reference, but it's kind of like listening to one of Marilyn Manson's big three records.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Hollywood. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. No. Or Antichrist Superstar. Or
maybe mechanic, some of the tracks from
animals.
It. Yeah.
That's all, you know, the whole thing sort of just melts together.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah. Well, that sums up the Dark Pool. One thing I want to mention before we get on to wrapping up the podcast. This song, I read somewhere that apparently up in Darwin, so for those who don't know.
I read this
up in Darwin.
Yeah.
Darwin's in Northern Territory, Australia. apparently, the intro to Lily and the Mer. I don't know.
No,
if
it was the whole song.
It was the whole song. Okay, got someone fucked up at a radio station there and had
Triple
it spinning. Triple J fucked up, did they? Yeah. Triple J in Darwin had it fucked it up and it was playing for 4 or 5 hours straight.
4:30 in the morning till 8:30 in the morning.
So how many times is that? That's like 100 times over.
It's a 4-minute song.
That's so good.
And so I don't know. Maybe someone really liked them and just wanted to get it out there. But you have to do those apparently things. Someone just fucked up and it was stuck on loop.
Yeah, good.
I don't know how that happens this day and age, but...
Yeah, I thought it was all digital and actually clicked repeat. Who knows?
And so they're getting famous for maybe the wrong reasons.
This song's 4 minutes and 2 seconds on the nose.
Yeah.
So that's basically 60 times over 4 hours.
It would be like, do you guys ever watch How I Met Your Mother back in the day?
No, because my eyes are connected to the brain.
Anyway, there's this scene where Ted and fucking what's his name? Jason Segel. Marshall. Ted and Marshall are going on this road trip and... it was an 8-track and it was stuck in the player and it was just 500 miles by the Proclaimers on repeat for this whole 8-hour road trip and they were just talking about it's a fucking annoying song, but they were saying that they'll go through phases with it where it will get to a point where you'll fucking start hating it, but then you'll get a second wind and you start loving it again. Can you imagine someone just listening to the channel over and over again and be like, I fucking hate Lily in the Moon. Yeah. What the fuck is this? But then an hour later, oh fuck, I love this song now.
Actually, you know what? Just to keep going a little longer. If you had to be in a car for an undetermined length of road trip, which song would be playing that would make you... what's the worst possible song that could be playing?
Worst possible? I thought you were going to say best.
Worst. If we consider that hell, if hell is an endless road trip with one song playing that you hate and you're sitting in the back seat and you've got car sickness from looking at your phone.
Yeah, I know.
It's easy. It has to be Friday by Rebecca Black. That's taking the piss a bit, isn't it?
I'm going to go Brown Eyed Girl.
No, look, from an actual band with talent, not some pop shit.
Okay. All right.
Well, that Brown Eyed, good. Okay. That's a band. No, that's a band song. Yeah. I've put me on the spot as well. Here,
maybe.
Ones after as well, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm gonna offend you. Maybe Into Sandman. Yeah. Fuck, there you go.
Fair enough, man.
That's a fucking good call.
Yeah.
After a while, I'd be like, fucking hell, give me a break.
Yeah.
Overplayed metal song in history.
I would say anything by Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that song.
Okay. Most popular song in history.
I hate it too, but only because I have to fucking play it heaps and it's fucking hard. The solo is fucking next.
Yeah, exactly. So. Musically, it's a skilled song, but fuck that song. Just... that would do me in, eh?
Well, are there any songs that if you were... stuck in a loop for eternity that you would enjoy listening to? Not so much that you would enjoy, but if you had to pick one that if you got to choose this particular song.
The only song you could ever listen to for the rest of eternity?
Yeah.
Crooked Path by Polaris.
Yeah, nice one.
Easy.
Decepticon by Le Tigre.
Mm.
Joel just did a weird thing with his head where he bobbed it back and forth. What about you?
I'll go Exist by A7X.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Because it's a longer song too, so it kind of feels like there's five songs in one. It's just a 16-minute track. So
smart.
It's instrumental for the most part, and there's a vocal part, and it's almost sounds like it's five or six songs blended into one, really.
That's a smart choice, mate.
Yeah, that's a smart choice. If I was thinking with my head, I would have gone Honor Thy Father by Dream Theater or something, because it's a 10-minute song. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, I fucked that one up. No, not really. All right, Joel. Finish us off with some bangs.
I'm going to give it the grand total of 4 bangs because there is no measurement to the bangs. It's all opinionated. Isn't it? There's no structure to how we just... all opinion.
It's literally whose line is it anyway, but the points are made up and the hosts don't matter.
Yeah, exactly. My opinion doesn't matter.
I didn't mean to say it that, by the way, but it's better that it came out.
Good work. Look, maybe this is a bit of a teaser because we're hanging out for a... Avenged Sevenfold song to come out so we can talk about it because Daniel's wearing his... me and Daniel, we can't. Daniel's got his Death Bats shirt on and that's going to be a real deep cut. I can't wait to talk about the Death Bats, Avenged Sevenfold and the rest of the weird stuff that goes on with that. I look forward to that episode, guys, but for today...
Well, they have... I believe they've finished production on the album. So usually that means a single follows, but Avenged do things their own fucking way. So who knows?
So I can't wait for that episode, but we'll...
Should be soon.
Yeah, we'll fill the void with other...
That's why we've been so long between recordings. We're just delaying as long as
we just made up the fact that I had to go to the ER twice. We're actually also trying to coax our sound guy Colin in. I'm gonna hit him up after this and be like, "Come on, mate, there's a song, there's a band that we can do. We can get him in."
Then we got to get a fourth mic stand. What are we gonna do?
Fuck. Sick of looking like idiots. We need someone to make us sound smart. But look,
it's literally just gonna be you and him nerding out over guitar stuff.
Love that. Yeah. Sorry, Joel. Look forward to our next episode, listeners. Thank you so much, and we'll see you in the next one. Or talk to you in the next one. Yeah, peace.